All right, we're back. I hope you enjoyed that great conversation with David Treadwell. It was really nice to see him in person, and also Kevin Gallo. And now we're going to do something a little bit different. But so what I want to do is introduce our wonderful panelists here. We have designers and developers. And I know one of the things that Satya mentioned, I know everyone watched his when he came into the keynote today, he talked about Microsoft's commitment to user experience and design, design being very important in this world of cloud first, mobile first, and of course, ubiquitous computing and intelligence, ambient intelligence. So we have great designers here with us today. Please introduce yourself.
All right, I'm Nathan Moody. I'm the design director and a co-founder of Stimulant here in San Francisco.
Awesome.
Hi, I'm Shane Ginsberg. I'm the president of EVB, Evolution Bureau, here in San Francisco and in Boulder.
Okay.
I'm Michael Newman. I'm a senior UX designer at Obscura Digital in San Francisco.
Excellent.
I'm Rick Barraza. I work with you, Charles Torrey, in the Quality Experience Design Group at Microsoft in TED.
Absolutely. And of course, Rick is also sort of the lead design evangelist for Microsoft, though he may not call himself that. It certainly is the case. And we need to make sure that everybody's mic is on, because we need, these are the people you want to hear, not this one. So please ask questions to designers. So let's start right off the bat. We keep hearing about mobile first, cloud first, and ubiquitous computing and ambient intelligence. What does that mean for people who design experiences for people who are going to be living in this world?
I think that it's really about recognizing that the we've gone well away from the era of convergence, and we're in a period of massive divergence in form factors for computing, everything from desktop to mobile to even intelligent sensing spaces we inhabit. And so I think that in thinking about that diversity of experience, as well as those experiences as discrete communication channels, there really needs to be an overarching, holistic approach to both technology and design to make sure that that's all integrated and makes sense contextually for all those different modes of use, and to make sure that those modes of use are not just contextually relevant, but they're meaningful in ways that really enhance people's lives.
Excellent.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. There was this great quote from Jaron Lanier, who's here at Microsoft, and he said, you know, the Internet of Things is actually about people, not about things. And, you know, our role is to figure out how we can create kind of magical and useful experiences for people, and then figure out how we can shape the things around them to make that work. Yeah, so
excellent.
I look at it that way.
Yeah, at Obscura, we try to create experiences where the technology is completely invisible, and so it appears more like magic. And because we have our own fabrication and technologies, we're able to craft things where things seamlessly happen. So that's our vision and goal.
Interesting that we're having audio problems during a design panel.
I mean,
we don't think enough about audio design, Rick. So what do you say about the ubiquitous computing, mobile first, cloud first, and what we just heard from our esteemed colleagues?
Yeah, nothing much more to add. I think that was great. I really want to zero in a little bit more on it's not Internet of Things, it's Internet of People, because that's fantastic, right? I mean, when you couple it with Bill Buxton, who was referenced in the keynote, he speaks a lot about it's not about invisible technology or transparent, making the interface transparent, right? It's about making it, making the interface transparent, basically, where my dining room table, I don't think about it. Of course I see it, it's not invisible, I see it, but it's in the context that I'm expecting, so it kind of recedes to the background. I use it and then I go. If I was in the bathroom and my dining table was there, all of a sudden, you know, it's popping out. So ubiquitous computing isn't just how do we get these nodes of information everywhere, but how do we do it in a way that for people it enhances their lifestyle so that technology is working for people, not people working for the machine.
You know, I want to build on that because that's an interesting thought. You know, our job is effectively to be magicians. Like,
exactly.
We got to make the stuff disappear, but when it does reveal itself, it kind of surprises and delights.
Sure.
And, you know, it's kind of an interesting way to think about ourselves.
Absolutely.
Yeah. We can also saw people in half if we need to.
Right on. Yeah. And so, Channel 9 Live is really all about people asking questions. So we're going to have questions for people on the stream. There's a lot of them. We talked about that. And so the first one, not surprisingly, is from a developer who wants to know, how can we developers who suck at design Well, improve our designs and our business products we create. So I'm a developer, I write code, I put things together and people use them and they're happy. But I'm a crappy designer. So that's his question. How can we improve our designs without being a designer?
Well, I worked as a UI evangelist, as a human factors engineer for a number of years, and it depends on the product itself. If you can use algorithms in order to second guess what the best case scenario is, and you can usually solve 80% of the problem of what input you're expecting from a user by determining, it's such a general question.
Sure. Maybe we could refocus it this way. So the typical way things work is designer designs the application, the experience, interaction design, experience design, solves a problem for people. Something manifests itself into something concrete that a developer gets that then implements to ship, say, an app.
Charles, that's under a specific type of development. Traditional at Microsoft, where we've prioritized traditionally, and we're very good at it, I think, for very broad scale, and we're business-focused, it's about transactions. But as you move more toward consumer development for small devices, delightfulness, when you're kind of shifting from a minimum viable product to kind of like a minimum delightful product, right, when that's your metric, that's not the cycle that they use.
It's not
the cycle. Strategists, designers, and developers from the very beginning influencing all the way through. This idea that design makes all these static comps and throws it over the wall and developers pick the components and snap it in, and then designers come in and pick the color and ship it, right? Design solves problems, and if the type of app you're solving, that's what you're focused on, it's transactional, it's LOB, nobody's going to be delightful. I mean, there's a lot of software out there like that, right?
Sure.
But if that's what you do, that's your workflow, and that's where you're making money, then that's a very different scenario than what we're talking about, right?
To step back from the question, I mean, design does two things. It doesn't just solve a problem, but it frames it. So honestly, if you have a pair of eyes and a modicum of empathy, you can design something. And if you're a developer, you can design something well. If you can see what you're doing through the eyes and the feel and the world of the person who might use it. So framing the problem, I think, is 80% of design. And then solving it is 20,
Know.
So, and I think we're in such a rush to draw boxes and arrows and color things in and create pull downs and touch screens that we forget that really what we're trying to do is figure out how to improve something.
And I agree. To this point, and we've had this conversation specifically, you and I, a lot. In specific, you want to get your apps better. If you're coming from Microsoft, if you're the type of person I'm assuming, right, we're working here. The first thing developers make a mistake is they think design is just what it looks like. And that's not when we're saying design what we mean, right? When we're saying design, it's are you solving the right problem the right way? That's how we think about it. In this question, I think they are getting a little bit more specific in terms of what it looks like. How can I make it prettier, right? Mm-hmm. First, the Microsoft operating system, a lot of what we had originally called our design language, that was aimed specifically to improve the quality when you're in that exact situation. If you're not sure what you're doing, Visual Studio, the projects, they give you what we call intelligent defaults, right? The default styles, the default hubs, interfaces, start with that. If you don't know what you're doing, start there. What we want to make sure, though, especially at a panel like this, is we don't think that that's the most level of expression you can do. That's where you start if you don't know what you're doing. Start there, intelligent defaults, the affordances of the system. The system wants you to think about search a certain way, right? Think about sharing a certain way. If you don't know where you are, start with the defaults, start with the intelligence. But these types of agencies, they should use that as a starting point, but then really bring in their brand differentiation, right? I mean, the types of customers we deal with, they live and die by their brand differentiation. We come in and we start saying, all these Windows apps need to not confuse the user. A lot of people say, no, actually, we need our app to delight, to have a visceral reaction at first, to get lost in our apps, right?
So I want to now get to these questions because that's wonderful. Thanks for asking questions. Naomi wants to know, what design considerations should we have when thinking about how best to use Cortana in our apps? And if you didn't watch the keynote, that's our now sort of intelligent, Bing-powered personal assistant, which is some really killer ways of interacting with something via voice. Mm-hmm. So I guess really her question is.
So one interesting trend that I'm starting to see is in the way we've been trained in design often is to, you know, create mental models of how our users will think. And that often manifests itself in creating personas for our users. But I think that increasingly, we need to start creating personas for our apps, and personas for our spaces, and personas for our devices. And when you deal with something like Cortana, it's really about thinking, really about natural conversation and use of natural language, and what services can be tapped in your app to return useful information on the fly. And I think that part of the key there is actually going back to something that was said earlier about the E word, empathy. Because I think if you can be empathic to your users, that's going to give you all the heuristics you're going to need to start framing your decisions in a better way around use of natural language.
It's just generally about voice. I mean, you know, someone I think once said, you know, voice is the technology of the interface of the future and always will be. And okay. I don't know if that's necessarily true, but we've seen almost 20 years worth of investment in building out voice user interfaces, and it seems like such a logical progression for us because it's just a natural part of how we experience it. But if any of you have ever tried on a Samsung TV to sit there and try and use voice as your principal interface, and full disclosure, Samsung's our client. It's still a work in progress because voice is exceptionally personal, and tonality and inflection and even silly accents mess the whole damn thing up. You know, the language, the design language you have is exclusively yours. And so, you know, it's so full of promise, and ultimately we'll get there. And we've seen huge investments by Microsoft in it and others. But we still have a while to go before consumers feel comfortable in interacting with the rest of the world outside of other people through voice, I think.
Excellent. Anything?
I can't add
what he said. Right on. So we should get on to the, although actually, no. What do you have something to say on that? I'm sorry.
First, I love it. And I want to respect it. I don't want to answer quickly or off the hip, because after watching it this morning, I'm going to need to spend some time and think about it, honestly. Okay. Because it can be very powerful. We're seeing a lot of these technologies come out. One of the guidances I'd probably say is for a lot of these newy technologies, like the Kinect V2, that, you know, for voice, for all of these areas we're rushing into with gestures, we're in this interesting spot where sometimes form follows fiction, right? And as we release these products to the market, they've seen these already in science fiction films, or books, or comics, or video games. They've seen Master Chief quip with Cortana, right? They've seen Tony Stark talk to Jarvis, right? You've seen people interact with their video games in Her, or whatever movies you want, right? So, as we release these technologies out and people embrace them, they're going to become something that we're not expecting right now. And that's okay, right? We want to do that. But we also have to realize that they've been trained through science fiction to expect it to act a certain way. And just because the technology is new doesn't mean they haven't seen it before. They're just seeing it for the first time in real life. So I need to spend some time and really think about it, how I personally want to address it.
Right on. Excellent. So Julie wants to know, and this is a good one, Julie. As designers, these people, what is your feeling about Metro? Which I guess we don't call Metro anymore, but it is, for the sake of this conversation. Meaning the new design language started on Windows Phone, has moved over to Windows, and is now on Xbox. Did Microsoft go too far? Or is the new iOS validation of non-skeuomorphism, is that validation that if you look at iOS 7, they remove skeuomorphic, if you look at their HIG, or you look at their design guidelines, they say, do not be skeuomorphic, it doesn't really matter, content first, content over Chrome. Well, that's her question.
At Stimulant, we've done a lot of work around Metro, and I think Metro actually changed Microsoft for the better in some unexpected ways. So when we started working with Microsoft, we started having these really interesting collisions between the OS wants to be flat, wants to be skeuomorphic, modern, and one of the terms that Microsoft has always used around Metro is authentically digital, which it resonated with me as a creative. But some of the brands we've worked with have very, very skeuomorphic brands, and it's all about texture and drop shadow, and how do you marry those things? And I think that if you're clever, there's always a way to bridge those gaps. But I think since the advent of modern UI or / Metro, I think that we at Stimulant have seen a big shift at Microsoft around saying, look, these are the components, this is a starting point, but you kind of got to go where the brand leads you as well. And I think that that's a really important subtle shift you don't see like real visibly in the day-to-day as a agency working with Microsoft. But it's been a really wonderful kind of shift. And personally, I think that the concepts behind Metro being device independent, typography and content driven works really well in the world of touch first and voice and natural user interface. And I think that I think it was a really bold move that everyone in the industry really respected. And I think it's not only changed Microsoft for the better, as you said, I think we're starting to see major ripple effects in other companies as well.
I think the skeuomorphic versus flat thing is actually completely beside the point. It's a bit of a red herring and a distraction. I mean, we look at these things in context of, well, Apple did this to validate this. I think it's the wrong conversation.
Okay.
I would argue or ask the question, did Metro go far enough? You know, rather than did it go too far? I understand this is in the context of prior versions of Windows, but you know, with every release we have to balance the delicate, you know, notion of like where we've been with where we want to go. And while Metro might have flattened, and flatness is to many designers God, to quote Brian McGinnis, mm-hmm. I think, you know, every evolution of an OS gives us the opportunity to actually rethink more of kind of the natural behaviors that people have. So it's not just about flatness or skeuomorphism, but rather kind of like, what's the intention? What's the problem? What's the context? And what's the humanity behind it? So
interesting.
That's just a thought. I don't know what.
Yeah, and I agree. It's a superficial change. It's what I would like to see is a user interface where people aren't always walking around looking
right.
at their hands.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very tired. That's why I think whether it's using the cameras for gaze tracking or like the new audio-based interface, something like that would be a lot better. I worked at Apple 2008 to 2011 working on a lot of different interfaces. And I think that it's irrelevant what it looks like. It's all about the interactivity. At Obscura, we do things that are larger environments, and so we're able to leverage more than just the power of touch. Like, we think that the displays actually, how are they touching you versus how are you touching them? Hmm. And so whether it's, you know, directional microphones that you can speak into the ether and it picks up your commands, or whether we're using specialized speakers that conduct off of your body, I think that it's old school to be concerning yourself with what the handset looks like.
Interesting.
Yeah, I think, so first off, there's the Windows design language. I think a lot of the challenge here is that what they call Metro, it was a blurring of a lot of different things. This was the reaction. It got really muddy, right? Any application you have is going to be either from transactional to immersive,
yeah.
right? And the pushback for it was a lot of people were not using real design. They weren't really solving a problem. They were making bad software that was hard to use, and they were adding a lot of gloss to skim it over. I joined Microsoft from an agency specifically because Metro, as a vision, their design language, I love the trajectory that they were shifting. I want to be a part of it. That's why I'm still here. But design is about solving problems. If you are a transactional app, which on the Microsoft ecosystem, most apps are, right? Metro was a forcing function to say, really think about the problem you're solving and do it well. You don't need the gloss to cover bad design. Really solve a problem. The challenge, though, is it became two things. Some people then took that to be prescriptive. I have a brand that uses skeuomorphism. Fine. If that's an immersive application you're creating, do that, right? There's a difference between a design language and what our visual identity is. And that's another thing nobody ever talks about. Mm-hmm. Metro, our visual design language for Windows, the operating system has a certain look and feel. At that point, that's Microsoft's style. That's the style. So any first-party apps absolutely should have that style. And if you're a transactional app plugging into the intelligent mesh, if you leverage that style metaphor, it'll be easier for people to use your apps. But when your app is sliding up to an immersive experience, mm-hmm. the operating system mm-hmm. should not be defining what that experience is. The operating system exists to make the apps look good. The apps do not exist to make the operating system look good. And until we realize that, everybody does, because I think that's kind of where we got off on the wrong foot. And it's the everybody we have a couple sure. years ago, right? Yeah. Everybody wanted a cookie cutter, and all these immersive experiences said, what's going on? Why do I have to strip it down? You don't have to. This is Microsoft's visual identity for our first party apps. It's what we believe in when you're a transactional app. But again, the operating system is there to make the experience of our customers mm-hmm. the star. The frame should never dictate what the painting is going to be. Right. The frame should always complement the painting. In our operating system that we're very proud of, it's intelligent, ubiquitous, all of these great things, but it's our customers' apps that really need to bring their brand right. and experience
there's,
to the fore.
There's a reason why the work that Michael does and the work that we do at Stimulant doesn't have a metro look and feel, and that there's 3D volumetric exactly. real-time particles, and there's a reason why Photoshop looks like Photoshop and Pro Tools looks like Pro Tools.
Oh. Exactly.
So, but the question I would ask then is, if you create a design language and then tell people how to speak, right? So, shouldn't it be general purpose? So if you're going to use terms like design language, then that should mean my ability to create poetry, stories, fiction, nonfiction, whatever. Maybe I'm going too far with the metaphor, but I don't see what's wrong with an experience that when I'm typing a text message, it looks like 3D gel. Right? Why is that a bad thing?
It's not. Make that up and release it. It's yep. not the visual identity that Microsoft is going to use. Their visual identity, right? And there isn't Microsoft design, Apple design. There's just good design. Okay. Good design is good design on any platform. But every product has its own visual branding. Our visual design language is our first-party apps and experiences visual branding. It's on the phone, it's on our tablet, it's on Windows, right? So Microsoft's not going to release a messaging app like that. But if you, Charles Story, want to make one, do it. Make it however
so,
you want.
So the people know out there, I mean, this is a change in shifting. So this is a change. This is a shift in thinking. I'm not sure what camera I'm looking at, but the fact is,
I think it's a change in conversation.
But so I can now make an app on our platform that is skeuomorphic, and it's going to get in the store. I'm not going to get police coming to my house right. saying, "My God, who are you?" You know. So that's all I'm saying. It's not scripture. It's right. guidance.
Yeah, you know.
Is that where we are now?
Sure. No. But even like a skeuomorphic interface is going to become less relevant because augmented reality uses real life in order to superimpose. So it doesn't matter if you're replicating reality on your device, it's irrelevant.
Do you know, I mean, design, like any business, is also subject to fashion. And, you know, 20 years ago, we were all doing flat. And then we went skeuomorphic, and now we're doing flat. And I think the interesting thing here is, there's what we're trying to do from our side in making this stuff, but the ultimate kind of testament to its goodness or not is on the other side, the people using the stuff. And great, unless you have a monopoly on distribution, you know, great stuff in the app world, whether it's skeuomorphic or not, doesn't matter. If it serves a purpose, if it solves a problem, great. And if consumers dig it. And the cool thing that we have in this world now is a very short cycle between like what we do and whether a consumer validating it or not. So we know if the stuff works or not very quickly, skeuomorphic or not.
All right, so we're going to go through sort of rapid fire now. This
sure,
is great,
sure.
Because I want to get to these questions.
Get to the
connectors. And then we want to get to the demo right. that Rick's done. We could also get to that in a different session, but we'll sure. maybe we should show that soon, like in the next 2 minutes. Larry, Lightbulb, we're probably going to want to have him demo his thing. But first, I want to get through some more questions. So let's try to go quick. Ready? Raymond wants to know, what advice would you give a developer to improve their UI skills?
Okay. Go to your favorite user interfaces and look at everything on that thing and ask why. Why is it there? What does it do? And then learn from that.
Try and rebuild it, which is how design and art has often been done, right? I mean, imitate the master, something you love, try and build it. You'll learn by doing more than by reading.
Excellent.
Yeah, I would come up with a use case that isn't predicated on software itself. When I learned 3D design, I tried to animate a dream, something that required me to almost be dictated by somebody else what's to be made, and that forces you to combine different parts of the API or whatever in order to assemble a new experience.
And get some dark frame glasses.
Wow. Yeah, and also, you're an anomaly, man. So Dev wants to know, today we heard of keynotes regarding applications can be used across all of our devices. We talked about the universal app. So that also will impact how you design your app. I mean, so that's his question, right? If I can write an app that has a lot of shared code and somewhat experience between three different form factors, a large screen on my Xbox, a tablet that's 10 inches, and a phone that's, say, 6 inches. I can share a lot of that experience. How do you design for that sort of world where you can maintain your empathy for your customers and the language or what or feel you're trying to get through?
Hire a professional. You can't commoditize design. That's the entire point of it, right? If you're doing a transactional app, you're fine. If you're really taking going to leverage experiences, you need to bring in a, we can't give you a component, anything. We can't give you a magic pill that says this is going to make your products delightful across form factors. That's why we exist as a profession. Work with a professional, hire a professional. That's what
you get. We hear everyone speaks to responsive design, and we're all doing it. You know, the struggle I have with it is that, you know, design needs to be in context of its use, and it's a very different context when you're sitting in your living room, you know, playing Halo versus when you're in a supermarket aisle, like holding your phone up to something. Mm. And so that's the challenge we face, is kind of building things that are universal and portable across devices, but also have some kind of context awareness and kind of a design applicability in its use. That's all. It's hard. It's really hard.
It is really hard. And I think that it's not only just about understanding the input methodologies and the output methodologies for, you know, a 10-foot experience versus a mobile experience. It's really thinking about what service are you providing and what do people want in that context. What I want out of an app on a phone while I'm driving, getting back to the question about Cortana, boy, I would love to talk to that app instead of having to look down or be otherwise distracted, which is very different than me sitting on a couch with a different form factor input device.
And I do want to call out one thing, because Obscura, who I'm a huge, huge fan of, has been a little quiet, and I think it's because we started talking ubiquitous computing and we went straight into apps.
Yeah.
But there's an entire range of software when you're still prototyping, when you're experiential, that's never going to make it in the App Store, right? I got into programming to make stuff, right? And it's not just about apps, right? So somebody like Obscura, and look them up, Obscura Digital, right? Amazing, amazing experiences. Using things like Kinect, using things like interactive sound, projection mapping, these are all the best things about being in technology in 2014. And if we just funnel it down to apps to make money during the day,
right,
and we're not capturing the hearts and minds of what you, when you go home at night, what you play with in code, that's what it is, right? That's why Kinect,
I was going to say, in terms of even like being in your car for wayfinding, I mean, what excites us is, like, for instance, in Holland, they have, you know, photoluminescent paint on the roadways, right, that's, you know, temperature based. If it's going to have snow on the road, these things appear. It has nothing to do with computers. And that's why at Obscura we make stuff, we fabricate it, and the back end is always supporting the user-centered experience, not the other way around.
I love what you're saying. And, you know, we've spent all of our time thinking about the world through the lens of the screen.
Exactly.
And the truth is, it's the world beyond the screen and the visual language and the literacy that we have. Like, when we drive in our car, we kind of know to drive between the lines, and we know to stop at a red and all of that. And it's building that language, not just what's on the dashboard of the car. Mm-hmm. And that's why what these guys do is just absolutely amazing. And we all worship them for that.
Don't look at me. It's 50 people.
Excellent. And I really love the term, like, empathy. Just be empathetic. If you're a dev writing something for someone to use, think about who's using your software.
That comes down to commenting your code, right? I mean, it was hard to write. It should be hard to read, right? I mean, that's kind of the default thing. Commenting is a way. You start with empathy and commenting.
So I'm being told to have you do that demo,
okay,
which is going to be a great way to end this. Thank you for all the great questions. Sorry we didn't get to all of them. A couple of them actually were answered without me having reading them.
Yeah, quick showing. We're showing the new Kinect V2 sensor in a Windows Store app using open frameworks for Windows Store. It's an abstraction library for graphics
really
and
cool.
agencies.
I love that.
It's also one of the first real-time 2D video syncing. Look how fast and responsive it is. I've been playing with some...
We look like a Radiohead music video.
Yeah, I know. So, and this is just really quick, fast, but this is what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
You got to get Sketch, create new things people haven't seen before, and eventually it'll turn into an app. But we have to, we have to care about play. We have to enable people to explore on our platform and let the people play. That's how we get Nui.
Beautiful. Hey, thanks for coming and doing this.
Thanks
really
for
nice.
Having
nice
us.
To meet you
really
guys.
Cool.
And keep on pushing the envelope and doing great things. For experiences for people. Right on.
Thank
Cheers.
You.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Yes.
Thanks for the questions. Happy birthday, Nine. Now there's a session.